Welcome to the Mom and Me podcast. My name is Dave Layton. By day, I'm an accountant for a construction company, and I am a huge podcast fan. For quite some time now, I've been trying to come up with an idea for a podcast for myself, and it occurred to me. My mom, Dee Smith, she just retired and lives in Mount Airy, North Carolina, which is literally Mayberry RFD. No joke, it's where Andy Griffith is from and where the show is based around. Mayberry RFD is where my mom lives. So she's getting a little bit older and has had some health issues in the past year or so. And I realized this is a golden opportunity for me to just talk to my mom, to have conversations recorded for posterity for all time, to have my mom share her stories in her words. What follows are those conversations. Thanks for listening to Mom and Me, and I hope you enjoy.
Previously on Mom and Me.
And one time I said, you're going to have to stop it. I'm going to hang up on you next time you call. No, Dee, you wouldn't do that. So he called, Tush using it. And it's like every third word, you know, because something went wrong with the load or something. It wasn't the load that he wanted. Or he didn't, it wasn't where he wanted to go, or he wasn't going to get home soon enough, or whatever. And I hung up on him. And now he's got to dial all these numbers again to get back. And between Roger and I, we, you know, each had a phone. But I knew there was going to be him, and I told Roger I would get it. So I picked it up, and I said, you know, good afternoon to your company, to your trucking. And he said, Dee, we got disconnected. I said, no, we didn't. I hung up. Oh, I'm so effing sorry. And I hung up again.
Episode 10, the 90s. Welcome back to the Mom and Me podcast. My name is Dave Layton. As always, joined by my mom, Dee Smith. Mom, how are you?
Hi, Dave. How are you doing tonight?
I am awesome. Thank you.
Good.
When last we spoke, you were a couple of years into living down there in North Carolina. You had been working at the truck stop for a little bit. Anvil's business was starting to grow, and you know, you're starting to make some friends and do some things. And how was life for you guys back then? So it had to have been mid 90s.
Yeah, it was early 90s, not mid. It was early 90s because we moved here in 1990, October 90. October 29th or 26th of 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're into 91, 92, 93. I'm at the truck stop, and I'm still looking. This is like we talked before. This is third shift stuff, and
right.
It's killing me.
No fun.
You know? No, not at all. And, you know, sleeping half the day and then working all night, and you know, you don't know day from night half the time.
Yeah, it's brutal on your body.
Looking for work, regular day work. And I saw a piece in the paper for, now this has got to be 1993,
mm-hmm.
sometime in spring maybe of 93. And I saw an ad for a dispatcher at a trucking company down in Mount Airy. So I applied for it, and I didn't get it. And
okay.
I was disappointed, but I still had the job at the truck stop. I hadn't given it up.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 weeks later, they called me back and said, well, you know, since they didn't hire me for the position of dispatcher, they had an opening at the front desk who did a lot of paperwork and just, you know, answer phones and stuff. And I said, I'd love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a day job.
Right.
So I gave notice at the truck stop, a really short notice, because they called me like on a Thursday or a Friday, and I was there on Monday morning.
Oh, wow.
The truck stop wasn't the truck stop wasn't happy with me, but it was, you know, they did understand. So I was there bright and early Monday morning.
What was the name of the trucking company? What was the name of the trucking company?
It was Federal Motor Express, and it's got nothing to do with FedEx. It was just Federal Motor Express.
Right.
And they did big haul trucking, big trucks, you know, long haul stuff. And just around the south, and Audubon, and their logs. They showed me how to do logs when the truckers would bring in their paperwork with their log books in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the payroll, and I did a lot of stuff, and I enjoyed that job. I really did. So that was 93. Traveled. I remember, I don't know where we went in 93, but in 94,
mm-hmm.
and it was fall of 94, and it was October. We went to New Orleans.
Oh,
we
no kidding.
We drove down to New Orleans and did all that stuff. And we did the Mississippi paddle boat thing.
Oh, how
and
fun.
Up and down the Mississippi River. And we stayed outside of the city in a hotel, and we hired some people to, there's a van that you call, and they come around to the hotel, so they take you into the city mm-hmm. to do kind of tour kind of things.
Right.
Well, going into the city, he got stopped. The truck, the driver of the van.
For what?
About eight people in the van counting Amble and me.
Right.
And he got stopped because I guess the van that he usually uses has all the right information on with all the right license numbers and all that stuff on the side of the van. This
right.
one had nothing. And he got, cops pulled him over, and he had all kinds of difficulty explaining who he was and that he was legal and blah, blah, blah. But what was going on was we brought a pistol with us.
Oh, no.
We were going someplace, yeah. And I was supposed to leave it at the hotel when we left because it's legal. It's legal to have a gun in your room, but just in your room, because then that is your domicile, and
okay.
you're legal to have a pistol. So, and we put it in the trunk of the car so we can't get at it when we travel. And all that's legal. But for some reason, it was in the bottom of my pocketbook. and now I'm freaking out, because if that cop had done any frisking and found that, I'd still be in jail.
That's funny. Do you remember what kind of pistol it was?
It's just a handgun, just like a 32 caliber kind of thing.
Right.
Just a semi-automatic kind right. of thing. Yeah, but if that had ever been found, and I kept trying to stand still and not look nervous and all that stuff, and he took us all out of the van and stood us on the side of the road. But he didn't, you know, search us or anything like that, which was really a blessing, I guess you can say, because I would still be in jail.
Right. That's funny.
But
so
we were to do
so when you,
a couple of things there. But we missed the boat because we didn't make it to the docks on time. So he took us in anyway, and he made arrangements with the boat to do the afternoon run up and down the river.
Oh, how fun.
But in the meantime, yeah, so when we got to the city, we had about 3 hours that we could just walk around, and we did all the streets, and went to Marie Laveau's voodoo shop, and we ate poor boys on one of the side streets, and we just, you know, walked the riverbank, and it was cool. It
yes.
was really cool.
Too bad there's nothing to do in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, too bad. And then we went and did the riverboat thing up and down the Mississippi on the paddle boat, and then we, you know, got off and drove back to the hotel, and Amber was sick at the time, and we decided to head on home. And we could make it down. I think we made it down in one day, but uh-huh. I wanted to stop on the way back because he wasn't really feeling good, and he refused to stop. He just said, keep going, keep going, keep going. So uh-huh. it was me that had to do all the driving.
So right. Thanks,
I was
buddy.
Not happy with him. Yeah. So that was October. In November, I took my shower, and I found a lump in my groin. And I went to the doctor in December, and they took a biopsy. And I went and saw the physician, the surgeon afterwards, and they told me it was Hodgkin's disease, which I had no clue what that was.
Right.
I asked him it was the kind that makes you shake. He said no.
No.
And then he used
that's Parkinson's.
The big C word. Yeah, he used the big C word. I didn't get overly excited. I really didn't, because it still didn't hit my brain, I guess. But he wrote it all down, and I went to the library, the Mount Airy Library afterwards, and had the woman look up Hodgkin's disease for me.
Uh-huh.
And when I come home, I gave him all the paper, and I said, this is what I have. And we have to go see an oncologist in February. February 1st, I got to go see an oncologist in Winston. They've made an appointment for me. So we just kept doing our thing, you know, going to breakfast, mm-hmm. or whatever we were doing, and the February 1st came that night, January 31st, we had had some puppies. We had had some dogs when we first came here, and they both died. So Amber wanted another one, and he found, back in the fall, and he found a little poodle. And we got the little poodle. But then that February, when January 31st, that night, I had an asthma attack caused by some spray that he had been spraying to help the dog not pee in certain places. And it put me in a coma for 2 weeks.
Right.
That's that coma. Yeah, that thing, that horrible thing.
Right.
You know? And I woke up two weeks later, and Ample had given the dog away. And I went from 147 pounds to 106 and was just skin and bone and couldn't walk. Every muscle in my body had atrophied.
And,
every muscle.
And
they had to teach me how to walk and comb my hair and brush my teeth and feed myself.
Right.
Feeding myself was funny as hell. They strap a spoon to your hand, and they give you this soft ice cream kind of stuff. So you wiggle your hand, you're wiggling, squiggling, and you get your spoon in there, and you pick it up, and you head for your mouth, and it goes up your nose, or it goes in your eye, or in your ear,
right.
Every place but your mouth. And so anyway, 2 weeks later, I wake up, and then they keep me for about 5 weeks after that and do rehab to give me some training to get my muscles working again.
Mm-hmm.
And I come home. And now in the meantime, the job at the trucking company, they went bankrupt. They went out of business.
Oh, no. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, weird. Yeah.
So this is what year again? This is 93 into 94?
94 into 95.
94 into 95. Okay.
93 is when I got the job at the trucking company early in the spring. And then in the fall of 94, I was diagnosed with the Hodgkin's.
Okay.
And then February 95, I had the asthma attack. And then in March or April, I guess I started, April of 95, I started chemotherapy for the Hodgkin's. They put a porticast in my right upper shoulder kind of thing.
Right.
Where they, poke a needle in and then drain 5 bags of chemo into you every other week, and then you come home and sleep for 2 weeks.
Right.
Ample is doing his thing and freak him out. You know, he's not good with sick.
And we can touch on that for a little while too, because this was kind of a pattern that was problematic. For you guys, for we as your kids. So I was trying to sort out the time frame, because I moved to Colorado in the fall of 94. So it's really not too long after that where you have this episode where it causes the asthma,
well,
the
didn't
asthma
let
attack.
Anybody,
well, that's where I was going. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He wouldn't let anybody come here because he didn't. He felt he was being put upon, I guess, because he didn't really want to have to watch anybody. Or he had enough issues of his own was his reason for it.
Right.
You know, he's still worried about me. But in the meantime, all that time, I mean, I don't know what he did for the 2 weeks I was there in ICU. I guess he must have visited. I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm out cold. But I know that the 5 weeks I spent in rehab, he visited 3 times.
Oh, that was it.
Because
it
bothered him. He hated to see me sick and in a hospital, or that was what he always said.
Right.
You know, that he couldn't deal with it.
Right.
So I always let it slide.
Right.
Shouldn't have, but I did.
Well, and I guess that's kind of one of those dynamics that in the relationship, because anybody that's been in a relationship, you kind of make those concessions. And it, for me as like the outsider, really, at that time, I had no idea what was going on. I know Dory and Bud had no idea what was going on. It was after that, and maybe you're still in the hospital in the rehab or something along those lines, but your sister-in-law, my aunt, Junior's wife, Marcia called me to tell me what was going on.
She was the one. I don't know how she found out, unless Amber called Dory, and Dory was to call you guys. I don't know which one he called. I know that he didn't call you, and I really know that he wouldn't have called Buddy, so he must have called Dory.
Right, and Dory, I don't even know if that was the case. He might have gotten a call at the only way that I can think of is I didn't even know Dory knew about it, but I thought maybe like Marcia or Junior or Lou had called just to say hey, right out of the blue, so, you know, just to say hi to you. And
that's possible too. I don't know.
Right.
I honestly don't remember. I mean, there's a lot of things I lost memory-wise those 2 weeks.
Right. So the challenge was, you know, we're in Colorado. You're in North Carolina. Dory and Bud are in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And we know nothing about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcia calls me and says, hey, I wanted you to know. I found this out. And I can't remember how she put it to me. But I was really, really disturbed that again, not on you and nothing you could do because you were in a coma, sorry. but the way his mind worked around that was, and what he would tell me later was, well, I didn't want you to come flying down here and have to, you know, travel all the way across the country just to sit around and do nothing because your mom was in a coma.
Well, that's a lot of bullshit.
Well, it is. And
I agree.
To me, you find figure these things out, right?
Somebody's mother, you know, you do it, you know, it's your mother.
Right.
You know.
And that was the beginning of I don't know if it was necessarily growing up, but it was a different relationship for me with him after that. It was like,
there was another incident after that.
Well, that was later,
that,
right?
And we'll, really,
right?
Yeah,
and we
not
can get
that
to
much
that.
Later, though.
No,
not much.
Well, and that's why I was trying to put a pin on what time frame, what year it was. So that was the beginning of 95. So he kind of sets the tone with this different behavior, in my opinion, that I wasn't expecting him to hide from us, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're in the hospital. We want to know what's going on. So he doesn't say anything about that. Fortunately, you are able to recover, and you go to chemo. You get well, but it's not a quick process for you.
No, that took another year and a half to recover. 8 months of chemo, and then another year or so after that before I was fully viable.
Right.
Fully viable, but, you know. In the meantime, he wouldn't allow anybody to come, but it was Marcia. Marcia was the one who kept calling the hospital, and I think she was the one that kept you informed. I don't know whether she kept Dory and Bud informed or not.
Yeah.
But I know that she was the one, because she told me later that she called every day, sometimes twice a day.
Right.
And got the
yeah, just what was going on with
you.
Tell
her what was going on,
right.
You know, and, you know, what kind of condition I was in and would I make it and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to rehab, I don't know anything after that. And nobody called me while I was there.
Right.
You know,
and I don't remember her calling with frequent updates. I just remember the one call.
The one?
Yeah.
Okay.
But for me...
But I'm sure you tried to call Anvil, didn't you?
I probably did.
Yeah.
And you know,
got the thing, don't come because there's nothing you can do except sit,
probably,
sit and suck your thumb or some
yeah,
kind of
probably,
thing.
And there's nothing you can do, so stay away, kind of mentality.
Yeah,
which was
they
really
Marcia and Junior too.
Yeah, which was really
disturbing. They were ready to come. Because Marcia told me she was on the telephone making plane fare arrangements.
Right.
When and she called him back. And he said, no, don't come.
Right.
You know, I don't want you to come down.
Right.
I got no place to put you up and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know,
which was just, in retrospect, you could just go, wow. You know, that's not necessarily the best way to approach that kind of a situation. And I think for years later, and he would always use Buddy as the excuse. you know, well, I don't want your brother to come running down here just willy-nilly and be a pain in the ass. And what am I going to do with him here? And what's he going to do? He's not going to do anything here. And that was always his excuse to not let us know what was going on. And, you know, you find that kind of stuff out. And two things for me that were very changing. One, my relationship with him after that, I was a little more galvanized. I was a little, you know, more forceful about finding things out. And two, my opinion of Marcia just went skyrocketing through the roof. She was always the, when I was a kid, the scary aunt. She scared the crap out of me.
She's the sweetest thing.
But as a kid, you have these, you know, visions and pictures.
Well, she was tough. She had three boys. She was a tough mother.
She certainly was.
Yeah.
And at that second, my opinion of her just did a 180, and it was awesome. That she would do that, knowing that it was going to piss him off if somehow the kids found out and she was the one. And, you know, and she did not give a shit. She didn't care. She wanted.
No, she didn't.
And she was like, screw him. I'm going to tell the kids because your dumb ass won't.
Yeah. And I'm really grateful to her. I really
and I am.
Am
too. I am so grateful for her to have shared that with us. So you get through that. And that was a tough time. In the start of a lot of just physical stuff that you weren't used to having happen in your life.
Well, you know, I went from not being able to walk at all or function, you know, couldn't walk, couldn't feed yourself, couldn't brush your teeth, couldn't comb your hair, to walking in a wheelchair. Once I got down to rehab, I was in a wheelchair and pushing around and doing exercises down in the gym every day. And then towards the end of the 5 weeks, they put me on crutches to see if I could get around. That didn't work so good. And no, they gave me a walker. They went from the wheelchair to a walker. And I did that for a week or so. And then they gave me the crutches. And that didn't work. I wasn't comfortable with them, and it hurt my underarms.
Right.
So they gave me two canes, and they made braces for my legs. They wrapped my legs in something and then made forms.
Mm-hmm.
And Anvil and a friend of mine from down there in Walkertown, just outside of Winston-Salem, she used to come visit me at the hospital sometimes. And she'd go down to the nurse's station and bring me a hot cup of tea. And it was like, oh, magic. Magic, she'd bring me hot tea. And I had her go out with Anvil to buy a pair of shoes that fit braces on my legs. And it was had a foot on it, so the foot had to go into the shoes. So great big shoes, size 9 or something, big fat things. But I could walk. I put those braces on with these two canes, and I could get around. But I was that way for a year or so.
Wow.
And, you know, I did some home therapy stuff, and that was awful because the guy that would come in had bad breath and was like, oh, my God, just go away.
Have a mint, will you?
Yeah. In fact, I think I offered him one time, and then the next time there was a woman who came.
That's funny. Yeah, I've learned it. I've learned in life when somebody offers you a mint, take it.
Yeah, but, you know, he doesn't show up anymore, so you got the hint. So I got through that and got through all of that and got back to feeling like a human being. And I found, where'd I go to work? I did go back to work after about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So back in, 95, 96, maybe end of 96 or 97 somewhere, I went and found a job at, it's called Leonard's Truck and Building Supplies.
Mm-hmm.
They built the outside buildings that people buy,
mm-hmm.
you know, the outside garages.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, like outbuildings. Yeah,
yeah, outbuildings and all kinds of truck things inside. They had stores all over the Southeast with bumpers and caps for the back of your truck and fancy wheels and steering wheel stuff. So Truck and Leonard Supply. And I worked in the office, and I enjoyed that. I did. That was a good office job until the CEO decided I was brainless or something. Again, maybe it's my Yankee accent. I don't know. But all of a sudden, people think like, oh, my God, you know. And so I had a lot of contact with the workforce, with the temporary help people. We used to call them a lot to get help.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Hispanics would come to build the buildings. And it was on an assembly line down in the big building
mm-hmm.
below. And I worked upstairs in the offices. And I was HR. So I did a lot of stuff. I did 401k stuff. I did payroll, like some payroll stuff, not all of it, but some. And I kept track of all the paperwork for the new employees, you know, and I did interviews, not interviews, but when the new employees came, they would come on a Friday, and we'd sit and we'd go over all the paperwork and fill out all the government paperwork.
Right.
The state paperwork, the government paperwork,
mm-hmm.
and then they could come to work and start work on Monday.
Right.
So I did that kind of stuff. And I, you know, it was a good job.
Uh-huh.
Until the CEO, like I said, thought I was getting stupid or something. Right.
So you worked there for about how long?
Oh, just a little over a year.
Uh-huh.
Just a little over a year. And like I said, we did a lot with the temporary people. So I called them and I said, you can find me a job because there's something going on here.
Right.
And it's not making me happy. So find me something. And they did. So I walked out. I've never quit a job. But this CEO said something to me, and I said, well, you can take your job and shove that guy. and I walked out. I've never walked out of a job. Ever. Ever.
No kidding.
I've always given notices, always been pleasant. And that just, he just tore me, or I tore him, I guess. I knew.
Right.
Sit down. they found me a place called Insteel. Which is, it's weird, because here in Mount Airy, there are some very large companies, like this Leonard Truck place.
Right.
They had six big places, sixteen
mm-hmm.
stores all over the Southeast.
Wow.
That sold these buildings and all these supplies.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's
right.
Big.
Right.
Right? So now I go to this place called Insteel, and they have six plants all over the country that make steel rod and wire, the mm-hmm. steel wire kind
mm-hmm.
of stuff
mm-hmm.
in big rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen? Yeah. So, and I'm working in HR again, and that was cool. But it was only temporary. I lasted a whole year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they were very nice, and they told me that the temp part was running out, so I called the temporary people, and I said, well, this one job's running out, find me something else. You know, and I was only, 55, 56, 58, maybe 57, 58, 59.
Oh, wow.
Somewhere. Yeah. So they did. They kept finding me jobs. I mean, I found the one at Leonard's on my own
mm-hmm.
after the cancer for that time. And then I got to from Insteel. I was only there a year,
mm-hmm.
and they found me something at Renfro
right.
Corporation.
So
where
what
I
year
spent
was?
A lot,
right. What
17
year,
years.
Right. So what year was that? That was like 99. That you got in
90,
at Renfro.
2000.
Okay.
2000 when I went
wow.
to Renfro.
Okay, I didn't know.
June of 2000 when I went to Renfro.
So back up a little bit, and we had touched on a challenge that had occurred in your life and in my life as it pertained to you with Anvil, and that was, we figured, 95-ish.
Right, okay.
So 96.
Well, in 95, when I had finished chemo and all that stuff, you and Deb had a baby.
Right, so Robin was born in April of 96.
Right.
So we're in Colorado.
So I've gone through all that, now it's 96.
Right.
And I'm still recovering. I'm still
right.
Still weak and still at times and
right.
still, and we drove out to you.
Right.
We
and this
drove
was
out to Colorado.
Right. And I want to say this was maybe 97. I don't think Robin was quite a year yet, but was it in the winter or
no,
the fall?
No, she was an infant, sweetheart. She was an infant.
Okay, so
she was only a few months
okay.
old.
Okay, so it was still later 96. Okay.
No, it was that summer.
Right.
So, because it was good weather and
okay.
we drove out.
Yeah, I seem to recall it being fallish, but that's probably just me misremembering stuff. But I was so excited. My mom is coming out to see my firstborn child, my daughter, mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. is just the apple of my eye. Never experienced anything like that before. Now I know what you feel like, you know, having that kid.
He was in Aurora.
We were living in Aurora. That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you guys came out, and I guess I didn't really fully understand the depth of how sick you were previous to that.
Probably not.
At that time.
Probably not.
Right. So you and Anvil come out, and we have plenty of room, right? We had...
Yeah, it was great.
You get to see...
We had a dog, and we'd sit around outside in the evening and talk. And then, I don't know whether it was Debbie's idea or your idea, but somebody wanted to go hiking up in the mountains. You wanted to show us a mountain. No, first, we took one day and did a trip up on top of Mount...
Pike's Peak. And I'll tell you this, I was white knuckling up that mountain. Oh my God, I was petrified driving up. I was, holy
up
crap.
It's going down that I freak out. I can go up anything, but I can't go down.
So we get up there, right? And we hadn't lived in Colorado all that long. Probably the summer, kind of getting towards the fall. So we get up to the top of Pike's Peak, and it's freezing out. It's snow.
Yeah,
there's like snow.
There's a snowstorm. there's a big cloud coming across, and right. we're in the middle of a bloody snowstorm.
Right.
And the snowstorm goes by, and then we're in the sun again.
Right. Right. So we're doing some of the touristy stuff with you guys, showing you around, and just kind of enjoying you being out here. Hadn't seen you in a few years. I think Deb and I had visited you once before we moved to Colorado. When we were in Massachusetts, we had driven down here.
Yes.
So we really hadn't seen you in a long time, so it was great. And I think you guys were planning on spending a week, maybe 10 days tops or something like that.
Not that long, maybe a week.
But you guys drove out.
Yeah, we drove because, he had his own business and I wasn't working. So we were cool. We just drove
right.
and stopped and got hotels and, did our thing.
Yeah, and you got out and spent a few days.
And we go to Pike's Peak and then... Somebody decides you want to go hiking in the mountains, and we get out there, and you put on this thing. You got Robin all tucked up on the front of you,
mm-hmm.
and some kind of a
little back like kitty pouch backpack thing. Yeah,
pouch. Yeah, yeah. In the front of you.
Uh huh.
And I guess Deb packed a lunch or whatever, and I understand that he was upset, maybe that he didn't think I was well enough to do what you guys had planned. Or maybe, you hadn't explained it enough, or we didn't ask you enough questions about what you had thought we were all going to do,
right.
whatever. But, he starts making a scene. So we all get back in your car, and Diddy bought back to your house. And it must have been a Sunday night, because I know the next day you went to work.
Right. Yeah, so I don't remember the... The hike part of it, though, that's the weird part that I'm not remembering. So thank you for refreshing my memory there.
That's the part, where the freak out part started.
Right.
And somewhere something was said about, that you don't understand your mother's,
right.
disease or whatever.
What's going on with her. Right.
Yeah. And they've just some words. And we get back to your house I think we went straight back to your house and had something to eat, and then
right.
we all went to bed
right.
or whatever, or just sat around and waited for the day to finish. And
right. It would be kind of hard for me to have a full understanding of how ill you are, because he never told me.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And
I never did. And
right.
and I don't understand that, why I never did, but I was not even capable, I guess.
Right.
Of letting you understand how sick I had been, or how debilitating I was, debilitated I was, you know, because I was. I was just a junk.
Right.
You know,
so he gets defensive, right? It sounds like that, you know, you're on vacation and we're out running you around ragged and you're ill and infirm and not capable of, you know, exerting yourself so much. So he gets offended at that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but he should have not. He should not have.
Right.
He really should not have. He should have sat and talked and just explained
that
he didn't think I was capable or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I probably would have told him to hush or something because I thought I was.
Right. So let me ask you a question. Do you remember being okay with that kind of activity? Because we couldn't have gone too far for this hike.
We never went more than 20 feet.
Right.
We got out of the car. Robin attached to your front of you, and she's got backpacks on, and you know, off we start, and 20 feet in, he decides that this is not going to work.
Okay.
I mean, we weren't far. We never got any place. We never got away from the car.
Okay.
You know, that was as far as it went. So that's probably why you don't remember, because we never got anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So we come back to
and
the house.
It was probably dramatic for you, too, because all of a sudden, what the hell is he doing?
Right. You know? I remember the drama. It was definitely after that. So we come back to the house.
The drama after that was, that next day, you went to work.
Right.
And he told me, we're going home right now. Go pack your bag. We're going home right now. And I said, well, I have to call you first. And I did. And he said, no. I said, yes, I'm going to call Dave and let him know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll wait for him to get back to the house. And he said, I don't want to be here when you get back.
Right.
He said, take me someplace. Or he said, I'll walk out. I said, well, let me take you. And we went. I drove him down to some place where I knew how to get to when it was like a Burger King or something.
Yeah, there was a supermarket and a Burger King kind of like a mile down the road.
Burger King, yeah. And then drove back to your house and waited for you to get there. And I told you that, you know, he was in a state and we were had to leave. And,
I was infuriated. I very seldom get that mad.
But
like
I had
that.
Asked you, he said something about telling him not to follow us. And I think I said something about trying not, you know, stay out of it. Just let me get him home.
Right.
Let me get him going. And you said you would. But when I went, you and I, you know, said goodbye. And it was hard. I do remember that for both of us crying.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
And I was really, like, really pissed with him directly. I called him. How can you do to her wife where she doesn't want to go? She wants to come and see her granddaughter, and you're being the little prima donna about all this.
So that was down when I did leave your house and you followed me to where he was, and that's where you had the confrontation with him.
Right.
At that Burger King or whatever that was, and I was sitting in my car when you had that confrontation.
Yeah.
Conversation with him. I didn't get out of the car. I don't know what you said to him, and
I swore at him.
That's fine.
Yeah, I was not happy with him because his actions were national.
I'm sure they weren't. I'm sure they weren't. And he you know, at the time, and I don't understand why he blew like that. I really don't at the time because I didn't think I was that bad off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was healthy, you know, I just wasn't as strong as I used to be. I was getting there, but I wasn't as strong, you know, but I did 99% of the driving and he was fine with that.
Right.
So we're driving 2,000 miles across the country to go to you. And, you know, when he's fine with all that, except, you know, I'm not to walk a little bit up in the mountains to get some exercise.
Right.
That didn't make sense.
So. Yeah, I was infuriated with that to the point so much where I did not speak to him for about a decade.
Yeah, I know.
And that was really, really hard.
Say, let me speak to my mother, and I would take the phone and go in the other room, and we would talk, you know. And, you know, but I promised you after that whatever illness or whatever happened with me after that, I would let you know what was going on.
Right.
Yeah. And I hope that I have followed through.
You have. And how many times have I come flying down there and had to be right by your side and you know, been intrusive and, you know, never.
Well, 10 years, not ever. And, you know, not since, but it's not been that bad since.
No, but yeah. It was a crazy situation in my estimation. It was just uncalled for.
From 95 to 2000 was hectic. It wasn't called for what he did to you.
Yeah.
It really wasn't. Well, or to any of you.
To you.
Not allowing you to come. And which shouldn't have stopped you. If you had really wanted to come, you could have come. You know, but I guess, I don't know why, you know, you would think that because he said no, that you didn't have to or you couldn't. But Marcia was ready. She was coming, well, no matter what he said.
Right. You know.
But when she would call, she would get updates, and she figured that, you know, I was being well taken care of. I do remember that Elaine called him because he told me later that she did. And she told him to get me to Boston where there was good health care.
Right.
And he said that, you know, was at Baptist Hospital in North Carolina, and it was just as good as anything in Boston.
Right.
So I was in good hands, and he was right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some very good hospitals here in North Carolina, you know, Baptist Hospital being one of them, one of the better ones. So I was in good hands. But, yeah.
Right.
She was upset with him, too, because right. I guess Marcia called her.
Well, right, and those two gals, Lou and Marcia, they're no bullshit kind of chicks, you know.
Nah, you don't mess with them.
For sure. So
don't mess with them.
So maybe this is a good point for us to push the pause button. We've gotten up to about 2000, mm-hmm. just before you're starting to work for Renfro.
That's where I started, July of 2000.
So we'll pick that up again next time on the Mom and Me podcast. Mom, I love you. I'm enjoying the heck out of these conversations and can't wait to do it again sometime real soon.
Me too. And my memory's getting better. How about that?
Yay. Well, maybe this has something to do with it.
I hope so. Plus the meds I'm taking.
Awesome.
No, I'm teasing. Okay.
I love you.
I love you, sweetheart. We'll talk later.
Thanks for listening to the Mom and Me podcast. Mom and Me is a production of DAL Studios. Executive producer is me, Dave Layton. Associate producer is my mom, Dee Smith. Email the show at momandmepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @momandmepodcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review it. And tune in next time for another episode of Mom and Me.